So it's Matthew chapter 25, and we're actually going to look at all of the chapter, from the parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the bags of gold, and then when Jesus talks about the sheep and the goats. There's a lot in there, but we'll try to do our best to get a sense of what God has to say to us from that. I don't know if you like doing pranks or you've ever been pranked, but I come from a family of people who like a prank. I'm not particularly good at them, but one of them I did, we had this, we shared a flat when I was in college, and our friend, one of the guys who lived in the flat with us, he went away on a kind of a conference representing the Christian Union in college. He went to London. There was another woman there, and she was representing the Christian Union as well, and we, his friends, thought they'd make a great couple, and but they didn't seem any interest in that. So when he came back from this conference, I got his phone. He left the room. He was absent from the room and well gone. I took his phone and changed her number. I put my number under her name in his phone, and then I began to send him texts from her just to tell him how much she'd enjoyed that weekend, and how much she'd really like to meet up for coffee. And he kind of was blanking her. He wasn't really responding, so we had to make the text a little bit more serious, a little bit more, "Now really, Andre, I really want to tell you about how I feel for you," but there was absolutely nothing. I can tell you they got married in the end, but not to each other. My brother loves a prank. My brother Stephen, he is really brilliant at pranks. He's now 35 and he's still doing them. I mean, he's too much time in his hands. And the prank like that one is all to do with absence. You know, the pranks really rely on people's absence. My cousins live around the corner from us. They're cat lovers. Their house is just filled with cats. And he was asked to feed the cats while they were gone away on their holidays. And he did, and he took his duty very seriously, and all the cats were well when they came back. But when they came back, they found that their bathroom had been completely redecorated in photographs from top to toe of dogs. And they hated dogs in their house. Absolutely hated the whole bathroom covered in photos of and similar to all kinds of ones like that. A prank works if somebody's not around in their own property. They're not expecting somebody to be doing something on them. They're about absence. These three parables, two of them are parables and one of them are story, are really about what you do in the absence of somebody. What people are doing in somebody's absence. Essentially what Jesus is saying, "I'm coming back. In the meantime, in my absence, how are you going to live? What are you going to do in my absence? What are you going to get up to while the king is away?" Each of these has that theme. The theme that runs through all of these really is a theme to do with readiness. A seriousness about your purpose and your existence and why you're here. At the end of chapter 24, that theme of readiness appears in a very small little parable that Jesus tells, one about a master and a servant, and the master being away and the servant beating up the other servants when the master returns. And again, it's about readiness. Are you ready for the master coming back, and how do you behave while he's gone? And then we have this parable of the 10 virgins, and the parable of the bags of gold, and then a little story essentially about sheep and goats, or a picture or image about sheep and goats. And these are about what it is to be ready. The parable of the 10 virgins, I've spoken this not too long ago, so I won't go into it in too much detail. But again, it's about readiness. What we read there is about 10 virgins, and in the culture at the time, there's loads more to this, and I don't have time for it all to explain to you, that they had a particular job to be ready for the groom who was coming for his own wedding. They had a job to greet the groom. And we read in that story that the groom is taking ages to get there because he's kind of going around the community greeting everybody before his wedding. And these virgins fall asleep. These women are waiting for him to fall asleep. And we read that five of them have kept spare oil in their lamp, and five of them haven't. And at the time when the master returns, but the five who've got oil in their lamp are ready to perform this custom. They have oil, they can perform this custom, but the five who didn't bring oil with them couldn't perform it. And they ask the others, "Can they borrow some oil?" And they say no, and in the end they haven't been able to perform the function that they're supposed to function because they weren't ready for this. And there's at least two details as we read these that you think, oh, there's something quite arresting in what Jesus says about there. First of all, you have this little note about the things that they asked, "Can they borrow some oil?" Now, if you're looking at this as a purely ethical question, you're saying to yourself, "Well, why would these other virgins not lend these ones some oil? Would that not be the friendly thing to do?" That is kind of that's not what the parable is about. Essentially, what Jesus is saying here is, there are some things that can't be shared. There are some things that you can't borrow from somebody else. It's the first thing that strikes us here. You can't borrow a spiritual life from somebody else. When you meet Jesus, because Jesus says that's what's going to happen, either when we die or when he returns, we will meet him. And the question is, are you ready to meet Jesus? That's the question at the end of chapter 24, and it's the one that he takes even further in chapter 25. Are you ready to meet Jesus? Are you prepared for this? And what we learn in this parable, the first thing is, whatever it is that means being ready, you can't look to somebody else and say, well, I was close to that person. I used to visit a family in the church where I was assistant, and I'd come to the door, and though the whole family were connected to the church, the husband, the man of the house, would always say, oh, hang on a sec, my wife's actually not in, there's no point in you being here. And I'm thinking, no, I'm here to see you all. I'm interested in your soul, not just hers. Oh no, but she's the religious one in the house. When it comes to meeting Jesus, being married to somebody who's religious or spiritual isn't going to be a help to you. When it comes to meeting Jesus, having been around some Christians who are very fervent about their faith isn't going to be very useful to you. If you've come to church and you're part of this community, which we want everybody to be, but actually you haven't got to know Jesus yourself, you haven't become ready yourself, actually I'm glad you'll have been here, but it won't mean that you're ready for meeting Jesus. So that's the first thing. You can't borrow this from somebody else. The second thing that Jesus says that doesn't fit, actually, with some of the pictures that we have of Jesus. I've been wondering this week, chatting to some friends, about depictions of Jesus that we find in books or on TV or in movies. And it seems to me that Christians are represented in broadly two ways. In one sense, kind of Christians who you couldn't like or want anything to do with. I'm talking about the kind of Ned Flanders, just, you know, really hyper-zealous kind of Simpsons character who's highly do, whose faith seems completely unrealistic. Or in that same category, it's the kind of religious people who are just unkind and mean and live for themselves, who are hypocrites, who do their own thing. We see loads of those kinds of characters. So those are ones who you wouldn't want anything to do with. But then sometimes you've got Christians who are actually quite likable, who appear in things. So I'm thinking, for example, of the priest who appears in the TV show Fleabag. And he's quite, people like him and are drawn to. Maybe President Bartlett's character, if you've ever seen the TV show The West Wing. A man of faith, a well-liked character. But the thing with those people is, they rarely or ever say things that sound offensive in our culture. They rarely, if ever, their kind of Christianity is a kind of Christianity that just fits neatly in with, sure, we're all here, we're all doing our best. They're actually not that like Jesus. Neither side are that like Jesus. They lack the compassion. These guys seem to lack the compassion of Jesus and love of Jesus. And this pool seemed to lack the seriousness of what Jesus says about where we are with him. So the second surprising thing that Jesus says is that verse 10, it says, while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. The door was shut. Later, the others also came. Lord, Lord, they said, open the door for us. But he replied, truly I tell you, I don't know you. The door gets shut. Each of these parables describes a separation, a division between those who are in and those who are not. It's inescapable. It's not a throwaway line. It is, there's chapters of the Gospels on this. Jesus is on a mission to make sure that you know that you respond appropriately, that you take responsibility. Dick Lucas calls it your responsibility for your spiritual readiness. Whose job is it for you to be a disciple of Christ? For you to grow in your discipleship? I have a role in it. The elders have a role in it. If you're in a home group, your home group leader has a role in it. But the number one person who's responsible for your spiritual growth is you. Not your youth leader, not your Christian teacher, not your Christian friend, not your husband, not your wife, but you. We all have those friends Maybe you are that friend. I've occasionally been the friend. But I have a friend who's always late. And I'm not thinking of the guy I talked about at the beginning, who we did pranks on, but he was always late too. Just if you happen to ever watch this, Andre, you are both of those categories. But I have this friend, and I meet him for dinner a few times a year, and we meet in town. Now, I can tell you, like clockwork, when I'm in the place where we're meeting, I mean like clockwork, about 5 minutes, I'm really sorry, I'm running late. I'm going to be 10 minutes late. Traffic terrible at Houston. I mean 6 or 7 times. I mean literally, I know, just adjust, I just plan. I don't go to the spot where we meet. I go to a coffee shop, I bring a book with me. And for his stress and my frustration, it's beautiful. I just sit there and he just tells me when he arrives. And it's perfect. God will adjust for us in this life and welcome us. And no matter what our background is, no matter where we've been, he invites us. But there is a time where it's too late, where there isn't an adjustment anymore, where there's a time where Jesus will say, have you been with me or you haven't? We prepare for the future now. We prepare in all ways. We've been encouraged to prepare for the future, being green in the environment. You're encouraged to prepare for the future when it comes to a pension and taking out insurance. But we prepare for the spiritual future now. You don't leave it to a different day. That's the first parable. The second one then is the parable of the gold. If the first parable tells us what we need, that we need to be ready. First parable tells us that we need to be ready. The second and then the third image tell us what readiness is. It's helpful, isn't it? You need to be ready. Then Jesus says, well, here's what it means to be ready. What it looks like. What does it look like to be spiritually ready? And what it means is, it means to be a committed disciple of Jesus. And he describes it. Look at the second parable. Again, we read about a man leaving. There's an absence of somebody. What's going to happen in his absence? And he gives responsibility to 3 people. Bags of gold. Now, the old reading, as Anne read this morning, says talents. Okay. Now, that word is a Greek word. It's talenton. It actually doesn't mean talent. That's where they've changed it in the version, the most modern reason. Actually, what it meant was a bag of gold. But our English word for talent has come from that. So it's a bit confusing. But it means a bag of gold. This man gives bags of gold to people, 5, 2, and 1. And he said, when he comes back, then he says, what have they done with this? These bags of gold are worth thousands of euro in today's money. And what we read is that the first and the second men have put their money to work. They've both gained exactly what they were given. So one is given 5 and has 5 more. One is given 2 and has 2 more. Different amounts of gold were given. Each made 100% return. And Jesus says they're both treated exactly the same. They both at the end are told, well done, good and faithful servant. You've given something, you put it to work, and there was a return on it. But the third man, we read, put his money in the ground. And when the master returned, he had nothing to show, simply the same amount that he first had. Now, if you're kind of a conservative and defensive sort of person, putting your money in the ground somewhere safe where nobody else finds it seems like a good thing to do, as long as you remember where you've put it. But there's no chance of any return being made on it. We discover in verse 25 that essentially he's done this out of fear of the master. The master calls him wicked and lazy. Now this is almost certainly a parable about religious people. People who claim to have faith. And maybe there's something being directed at the Pharisees and religious leaders here. Saying you know something of the truth. You've been given something by God. You know something about God. You've been blessed by God. What have you done with it? Sense that maybe the Pharisees have hidden the knowledge of God. They've trained and they've studied. They're not willing to pass that on, their insights and their wisdom and the light that they have, to others. If you've received the light, you become a beacon of light to others. This is a parable about usefulness in the kingdom of God. I love to hear stories of people who are making decisions that show that they're invested in God's kingdom, not in their own riches, not in their own success. And I heard a lovely story this week about a couple who live in Glasgow, and both of them did very well when they studied to be lawyers and were doing really well in law. But she gave up her career in the kind of regular law world, and she began to work for refugees who were coming into Glasgow from the Middle East. And she spends her days now working for free for those people. She's learned Arabic so that she can communicate with them, and she can communicate in their own language and help them. She's got a young family, but she has Syrians and she has Saudis and she has Moroccans and Libyans through her house all the time. Because she sees that God has given her a gift, he's given her something that she can use for other people. I don't know if they're in the five bags of gold category. Jesus doesn't tell how to tell whether that's a particularly lot of gold they've been given. Doesn't matter. You don't need to sit around going, am I a five bag of gold person or am I a two bag of gold person? Doesn't matter at all. God says, whatever you've been given, use it for his kingdom. Use it so that there's a return. Whoever's been given will be given more, says Jesus. This is about taking responsibility for your own discipleship and ensuring that you grow, that there's spiritual growth in your life. And if you're willing, God will cause the growth in you. You don't have to cause the growth. It's about your attitude to God. And I want to say something about Balbriggan. We've started this church in Balbriggan, and I was up there last Sunday, and it was lovely. We received 8 new members into the church in Balbriggan. For most of you, you don't know any of those people. Don't any of those people. One of those people is called Keith. He's a brand new Christian. Found a church home for the first time since Balbriggan has started. Came with his 2 daughters. They were there. Never taken communion before in a church like ours. And he was just so happy and excited to become a Christian, to be a member of the church, to take communion as part of that church family. And it was just lovely to be part of. And I want to say to you all that to do Balbriggan, you may realize this and notice this, there has been a cost to us. We could have stopped and said, hey, things have been great here in Donabate. Let's, make ourselves nice and, cozy with each other. Let's continue to grow here. Let's not do anything elsewhere. But no, we had the sense that God was calling us to do something about Brigham, and there's been a cost. Our rotas are hard to fill at the moment. They're hard to fill. They wouldn't be as hard to fill if we didn't do Bob Brigham. There's a cost collectively to doing that. And Bob Brigham's not finished. It will still need and continue to get our help, and it will. But we also now need to remind ourselves of who we are as a people. A people who God has given each other to, given his spirit to, grown as a church family. And again, I think we need to say, well, what does it mean for us to invest in this kingdom around us, this community around us? To see growth here and to see others come to faith here on this peninsula, invite them in, and this part of North County Dublin. We have a responsibility for us to be taking the initiative to pray for each other, to tell each other again the story of what God has been doing, to admit again that we're struggling and we need the good news, to ask for help and to grow in faith together. So I want to ask you to be brave as an alarm goes outside. I want to ask you to be brave. Brave afterwards. Because in a sense, the easy thing afterwards is to go to somebody you know and say, how's it going? Because you haven't seen their faces, even under a mask, for such a long time. But maybe take a time as you leave to say hello to somebody you've never seen before. And in this church, it's always acceptable to say, hello, I don't know your name. Even if you've seen them every Sunday for 6 years. I've forgotten your name, I'm really sorry. Is your name Paul? No, it's Elizabeth. I mean, is your name Willie? No, it's Jennifer. I mean, you can say it at any time, anywhere in this church. You know, so that we know each other's names, because that's a very basic starting point of where we are as a church. That we say, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, I want to know you, this is what it means. Are you new here? No, I've been here for 7 years. Better to take the chance with each other than to not relate to each other. Please do that immediately afterwards. So then the parable of the sheep and the goats, and I'll finish with this. I'm not going to do any justice, but here's the overview. Jesus will return after being absent. Everyone will gather before him, and he'll want to know what we've been up to. This has to be taken with the previous parable. That's about being responsible for our spiritual growth. Taking responsibility for it. The separation is going to be done on the basis of how Christians have responded spiritually and how they've responded according to this image that Jesus gives of how we've responded to people's physical needs. You can't be a Christian without taking spiritual responsibility for people, for yourself and others. And you can't be a Christian without taking responsibility for the needs that come before you. The needs of those around you, the needs of your community, the needs in the world. Jesus says at verse 40, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Your readiness for Jesus' return is demonstrated and known by your actions towards those who are in need. Now, do we help people because we want to coerce them in some way to become Christians? We do want that for them, but no. We help people because we love them. We meet needs because the needs are there. We offer love and care no matter how people respond. But of course we want them to be Christians. Those things go hand in hand together. Christians who don't care for the poor and marginalized have missed a central element of faith. Hosea 6:6. God says, "Therefore I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." Don't do religious stuff or play at religious stuff, but care for those who are in need. Both elements need to be there. You have to know God to be a Christian, and you need to help others to be spiritually alive. Christians are lovers of the needy. Let me, in closing, encourage you to be ready. To be ready for Jesus. To have your hearts and your souls ready. For that to be seen in an investment in the kingdom. To take the kingdom so seriously. It's your greatest investment. And for it to be seen in loving others and helping others. In meeting people's needs and giving your resources for the sake of others. You don't do that to earn favor with God. You do it because you're responding to his favor given to you in Jesus. Let's pray together.